The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way. And that's with Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts and help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations, and their tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription at babbel.com/bluewire. That's 60% off at babbel.com/bluewire, spelled BABBEL.com/bluewire. Rules and restrictions apply.
We are live on the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast, brought to you by Rival Fantasy. Go to rivalfantasy.com or get the Rival Fantasy app. Today is, Sunday, April 30th. I am Drew Silva. With me here is Ryan Boyer. On this episode, we're going to cover some individual risers and fallers from the weekend, players who showed something encouraging and others who did not. We'll talk some fab and waiver wire targets to round things out too here on Sunday afternoon. First, let's jump into the headlines. What's the lead story for you, Ryan, from Saturday's slate?
So I'm gonna go a little off board here from actually what we talked about, but I figured it was worth mentioning at Coors Field South in Mexico City what happened yesterday. I saw that I think it was maybe DraftKings initially had like an over-under of 8.5 for that game, and then they took it off the board because the action was so heavy on the over, and it wound up being 16-11. Set a Statcast era record with 7 440 plus foot home runs. Yeah, so they apparently didn't set the humidor for the balls at like the Coors levels. They just did it for the rest of the ballparks, which was obviously a mistake. Because I think the elevation in Mexico City is actually higher than Denver. Yeah. So yeah, just a completely unfair environment for pitchers, very good for hitters. Do not start Alex Cobb and Yu Darvish today if you can avoid it. I would recommend. But other than that, a guy who did was in not necessarily a favorable pitching environment, but he made it one is Kevin Gausman had 13 strikeouts yesterday in a win over the actually, he didn't get the win, but Blue Jays got the win, 1-0 over the Mariners. 28 swinging strikes on the day, and 20 of those on that splitter. Velocity was up during the start, which is, you know, as well as Gausman has pitched this year, his velocity has been down at times, so that was good to see. Now has double-digit strikeouts in 3 of the last 4 starts. 54-6 strikeout to walk rate, over 38 2/3 innings on the season. So Gausman just looking, you know, that last year was like, I think like historically unlucky as far as like BABIP goes. Like he was just extremely unlucky from that perspective, even though his strikeout to walk rate, et cetera, was really, really good. He was my dark horse kind of pick for the Cy Young in the American League. Really looking good so far. On the other end of that game, Easton McGee was making his first major league start for the Mariners. He actually took a no-hitter into the 7th inning. Immediately was pulled after giving up a hit to Matt Chapman, even though he only had thrown like 64 pitches or something through 6 2/3 innings. But I don't really think there's anything there with Easton McGee. He has certainly earned another start probably. But 2 strikeouts yesterday. minor league numbers, pretty underwhelming. He's got great control.
Not great, yeah.
Yeah, but the strikeouts don't look great. It looks like he's probably going to get the Astros next. So I think we can chalk this one up to, you know, congrats on the great start, but I'm not really interested in Easton McGee.
Yeah, when Chris and I talked about it on Saturday's show, and when they made that sudden move to put Chris Flexen in the bullpen and to bring up Easton McGee, Chris was thinking like maybe this is going to be a piggyback situation with that spot in the rotation. But McGee pitched so well that, you know, he kind of went the distance, so to speak, as much as pitchers go the distance these days. And yeah, he probably earned himself another start. The Mariners do have other options at AAA to throw at that problem. It seems like Flexen has just kind of lost his rotation spot, at least for now. So they can try some other names in that spot. I'm sure McGee will get that next start because he pitched so well, but
yeah.
Not a guy that I would be necessarily targeting as a big time waiver wire pickup. RIP to Mike Shannon too. That news just broke before we hopped on, and you and I are St. Louis guys, Cardinals guys, grew up listening to him. I didn't really like him at first because it was such a weird style of broadcasting where you could be listening on the radio for five innings and like not know the score sometimes. Like you have no idea what's going on, but he just brought such a flavor to the game. And I mean, by the end of his run in the Cardinals radio booth, he was just beloved because he is one of us. He grew up here, was like a four sport athlete, I want to say, at CBC. Like it's a high school in town. Went to Mizzou, I believe. Isn't that right? And then played for the Cardinals and then became broadcaster. I remember Fangraphs had they pulled their readers on you know, how they feel about their local broadcasters, and the person that was writing up the analysis of the poll results was like, Shannon got rated so poorly on, you know, like his ability to do play-by-play, ability to keep you updated on what's going on in the game as a radio broadcaster. You know, there's things that like you need to know sometimes, but rated so highly on, you know, the beloved factor. And I think that kind of encapsulates who he was, just the voice of the Cardinals. I mean, after Jack Buck, of course.
Yeah. I mean, he was definitely an acquired taste, and like, yeah, I agree. Like if you're listening to a game, like he would go like minutes sometimes without providing any context of the game. But he had a just kind of a quirky, weird sense of humor, and you know, so many connections to the area, and I think that's a big reason why he was so beloved. So pour a cold one out for the Moon Man.
Yeah. Man, I might have to drink a tall Budweiser. I don't usually like to drink on Sundays, but just for the Moon Man. Yeah, man, he is just one of a kind, and I'm gonna say like I don't think that kind of broadcaster would be hired these days, you know, like you'd have to be a bit more polished. But it was great that he was so unpolished. He'd say some things that, you know, might get him canceled in another era, but just seemed like a wonderful man. And I was up in that, in the Cardinals booth one day. This was when Joe Buck and Shannon were on the call. This was probably, I was maybe in like eighth grade up there with some friends' parents who knew Jack Buck really well. And Shannon would broadcast. His chair was one of those big medicine balls, or what do you call those? Gym balls, you know, like the bouncy.
Yeah. Like a,
balls.
Like a workout ball thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Like the oversized thing.
That's what he sat on.
I asked. Yeah. That's what he sat on for his, I think his entire career, or at least toward, you know, the latter few decades of it. And I asked Jack Buck about it, actually. I was, like, eating a burger with Jack Buck. This was a really cool memory. I still have a photo. And he was like, oh, yeah. He said it helps with his back. I don't know. And then one time, I think my mom had one, and I tried it. Like, well, I was working this job or the job, you know, writing about fantasy baseball. And it actually kind of works.
I think it kind of forces you to have good posture. So that's probably part of it.
Exactly. And yeah. I'm totally a sloucher. And
yeah, same.
I like this chair. This is like a gaming chair that has a nice back. But anyway, we should get to some more headlines. Chris and I tried to talk about Aaron Judge and Jacob DeGrom on Saturday's show, but we were recording in the afternoon before the Yankees and Rangers game got underway in Texas and before the teams, you know, offered their pregame media updates on injuries and lineups and such. So we didn't have the information to make any sort of interesting or even really useful points. Now here on Sunday, we do have a better picture of the status of both players, both Judge and DeGrom. So Judge has a slight strain at the top of his hip. The Yankees feel like it's something that he might be able to manage and play through, but are going to rest him until Tuesday and then make a determination on whether there needs to be an injured list stint. If he doesn't return Tuesday, I'd say Judge almost certainly is going on the IL because this thing first popped up on Thursday. And you have 5 days there where there hasn't been enough progress. You know, you might as well make it retroactive and shut him down for a full week. Yeah. So I don't know if you're playing in a weekly league where you have to set your lineup tonight or tomorrow morning. Do you chance it and start Judge? I guess it kind of depends what the other options are on your individual roster. That's a tough case with the IL stint possibly coming Tuesday in a weekly league. It's really difficult to navigate. He's Aaron Judge, so it's like, man, I should if I'm only, you know, going to lose out on two games, or maybe even one game. I don't know. What would you do if you're if you have Judge in a weekly league?
I mean, yeah, like you mentioned, it kind of just depends on what your roster situation is like and how many other injured players you might have. My gut feeling is that he's probably going on the IL. So I would try to have someone else in that spot, but yeah, I mean, it just depends on your roster situation and whether you have a viable replacement. Like in an NFBC league, you can make those for hitters. You can sub someone in on Fridays. I think it's a pretty easy call to bench him initially in that kind of league and then just hope that he can be back by the weekend. But my gut feels he's probably going to go on the IL.
Yeah, I kind of have that feeling too. I don't know why they just wouldn't do it right now, because they can backdate it to Friday, and then he could be back, you know, early next or you know the following weekend.
Yeah,
I guess that's how that works. Or yeah, at the end of the next Sunday. I think that would just make sense. But we'll see. We'll know enough soon enough, if that makes sense. And then with DeGrom, he did indeed go on the injured list on Saturday evening with what has been diagnosed for now as right elbow inflammation. Left his start Friday versus the Yankees with what was initially called right forearm tightness. You worry when you hear the forearm is barking, then the diagnosis is that it's actually in the elbow, that there might be some kind of ligament damage. That's usually the trend with these type of things, but there's no word yet on it being that severe at all. It just might be kind of a wait and see situation where there are more scans coming following a shutdown period. So no real timetable yet. If it is just inflammation, you know, DeGrom could feasibly be back with the Rangers by late May. I know it's been a frustrating year already for fantasy managers who drafted DeGrom very early, but you kind of knew what you were getting into with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunately can't be surprised at all at this injury. Forearm, elbow, you know, any of that is troubling with a guy like DeGrom, especially who's like a kind of a slight build guy who throws so hard. And it's just, I just don't know if his body can hold up. Like, it's just, and I think the Rangers, and when he had that, like side tightness in spring training, they were super cautious with that. So I think that's probably a hint at how they would handle this. Like I would, even if it's relatively minor, which it seems like that might be the case. I think they're going to be really cautious and keep him out multiple weeks. I would guess, but hopefully I'm wrong and he's fine in a few days and can come back after a minimum stay. But one guy for the Rangers who's not injured, coming off of just a fantastic start on Saturday. Nathan Eovaldi, he had been decent prior to Saturday. Good from a strikeout to walk rate, not so much from an ERA perspective, but against the Yankees, 8 strikeouts, no walks, and a 3-hit shutout. Velocity was up, which was good to see. I mean, he was averaging just over 97 with his fastball. The last couple of years, it's been more kind of just a hair under 96, but 97's kind of where he was throwing a few years back. So that was really good to see. 39-5 strikeout to walk rate now, over 36 2/3 innings pitched on the season. And then they're going to, if DeGrom is going to be sidelined for a good amount of time, they're going to have to ride Nathan Eovaldi pretty hard. I mean, that's a rotation just generally, even beyond DeGrom, that's pretty injury prone, I think. John Gray is another one who can't really count on him making a full slate of starts. So I think Eovaldi, as long as that shoulder is feeling good, he had some shoulder issues late last season, but trending in the right direction. So hopefully he can continue out to build off of Saturday's outing.
Yeah, I really liked that addition for the Rangers. When Eovaldi's healthy and throwing at his best, he's a very effective starter, and they needed to build out that major league rotation a bit more. And they accomplished that with Eovaldi. The DeGrom contract, obviously they knew the risk involved with that. And the early returns are kind of the worst, not the worst fear, but, played into the risk that was there in giving him that amount of money.
Yeah.
Corbin Carroll had a frightening looking collision with the outfield wall while trying to track down a deep fly ball from Ryan McMahon in the Diamondbacks and Rockies game on Saturday. He was on the ground for a couple of minutes in obvious pain. His left knee drove directly into the wall at high speed. We know Carroll's a burner, and he burned right into that wall. He's not in the lineup for Sunday's series finale versus Colorado, but the diagnosis is only a contusion. He's considered day-to-day, so it seems like the Diamondbacks did avoid a major scare with one of their brightest young players, who just landed an 8-year, $111 million contract extension this spring. Carroll's met the hype in the early going, sitting on a 309 average, 910 OPS with 4 home runs, 10 stolen bases, 9 RBIs, 19 runs scored through 28 games this season. Probably has to be the NL Rookie of the Year front runner. Starting to move up the lineup for Arizona too, and rightly so. He hit 7th on opening day. That was sort of a disappointment and kind of shocking, but recently getting a lot of looks out of the 3rd spot in the lineup. I bet we'll see him at cleanup at times. And hopefully he will be able to return to that lineup in the early part of this coming week. It helps the Diamondbacks are off on Monday. So we could see Carroll getting right back in action in Tuesday's series opener against the Rangers.
Yeah, seems like they've dodged a bullet with that injury. Looked pretty bad, as you mentioned initially, but Seems like he's gonna be okay. Did you see that highlight, by the way, of the? I think it was Geraldo Perdomo, who we're gonna talk about a little bit later. Carroll chasing him from behind on the base paths.
Yeah, almost caught him.
Yeah, that was funny to see. It gives you an idea of that speed.
Perdomo's not a slow guy.
Yeah,
he's a shortstop.
Yeah, maybe with that banged up knee, Carroll's sprint speed will go from 100th percentile down to 98th percentile or something. But exciting player who's off to a good start. Another exciting player who looks like he's going to be making his major league debut this week is Gavin Stone, a Dodgers pitching prospect. It had looked like he might come up last week, but the Dodgers decided to bring back Tony Gonsolin on, kind of bring him back early from his rehab assignment. Looks like Stone's going to face the Phillies on Wednesday. Numbers in AAA so far on the whole this year, not great, but over his last 2 starts, 1 run and a 14-5 strikeout to walk rate, over 9 2/3 innings pitched. Last year between double and AAA, he had a 1.48 ERA, 1.68 2/44 strikeout to walk rate, and 121 2/3 innings. So clearly a talented young right arm that the Dodgers have. They have plenty of those. I don't know what the outlook is for him long term. I mean, he's, unless the Dodgers are maybe considering bumping Noah Syndergaard from the rotation already, I don't know that Stone's going to have a long-term spot unless they go to six starters for a bit. But, you know, Syndergaard's got another start today. Maybe they could look to move him to the bullpen. Phillies did that for a little bit with Syndergaard down the stretch last year. So we'll see what Stone does on Wednesday. I don't know what the workload would look like, even if he does get a long-term look in the rotation. But, you know, I mentioned over the last two starts, he did pitch well, but he only threw 9 2/3 innings combined. So, but, you know, 121 2/3 innings last year. So that should give him a target, I think, of probably 160-ish on the year. So be interesting to see how he looks on Wednesday. Certainly a talented guy, and that matchup is in Los Angeles, so he doesn't have to go to Citizens Bank Park, a little more favorable environment there.
Bobby Miller made his season debut at AAA Oklahoma City on Saturday too, and hit 101.2 miles per hour with his fastball at one point. I think at 8 pitches over 100 miles an hour. So the rich get richer. I mean, he could potentially be an option for the Dodgers like in the next month. So, hey man, that's something to consider too. He's a very exciting pitching prospect. The numbers with him like are, you know, a little kind of all around, but just the raw stuff is incredible. And I think he's going to be a really darn good pitcher for a long time. And then a quick note on Tyler Glass. Now, he threw a 2-inning live session Saturday without issue and was given clearance to begin a minor league rehab assignment with AAA Durham in the coming week, probably toward the end of this week. I would guess he makes 2 or 3 rehab starts before he makes his season debut with the Rays around the end of May, maybe even mid-May, if it's only 2. He's been out with an oblique strain, not anything arm-related, which I think helps the optimism that Glass now can quickly return to form with no more setbacks once he does get back on the Rays active roster. Just a nice little internal replacement there for Jeffrey Springs following the news last week that he's going to have, or maybe already did have, Tommy John surgery. That covers most of the big weekend storylines. We'll do some weekend risers and followers, weekend risers and followers. Why can I not talk today? And then talk about some waiver wire targets. I'm channeling Mike Shannon. This is a tribute to Mike Shannon. There you go. First, a little commercial break. A new MLB season means it's time for a new kind of daily fantasy baseball. Rival Fantasy is the fantasy platform reinventing the way daily and weekly games are played. And they've brought new games to the ballpark this year that fantasy players won't find anywhere else. Rival Fantasy games include Fantasy Bingo, Head-to-Head Player Challenges, and Fantasy Book, where users can select over-unders for 2 to 5 players. With games like this, daily fantasy has never been better. Right now, RotoWire listeners can get a $50 protected first play. That means if you win your first play, you keep your winnings. But if you lose your first entry, Rival Fantasy will fully refund you up to $50. Go to play.rivalfantasy.com/signup and use code RotoWireMLB at signup and deposit a minimum of $25 to get your first entry on Rival protected up to $50. Now's the time to step up to the plate and become a rival today. Welcome to the arena. Baseball is back. Swing into the MLB season with Vivid Seats and score tickets to all of the hottest matchups and biggest games of the year. Every crack of the bat, every deep center fly, every heart-pounding double play of your favorite team live and in person. Plus, with Vivid Seats rewards, now you earn rewards with every single purchase. Each ticket you buy gets you closer to your reward. Just buy 10 tickets, then simply cash in your credit toward your 11th ticket purchase. It's that easy. A pro tip, buy tickets for your whole group, split the bill, make progress towards your own 11th free ticket even faster. From behind the plate to the upper deck, Vivid Seats has great tickets for all the 2023 games that matter to you. Just visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. See vividseats.com/rewards for terms and conditions.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, we do a three up, three down from Saturday on these Sunday shows. You want to get us started with someone you liked what you saw from on Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, I guess he would kind of qualify for the up and down portion, as he often does. We got the full Edward Cabrera experience on Saturday. Career high 12 strikeouts. He struck out 8 of the last 10 batters he faced, 18 swinging strikes on the day. Also, 5 walks, and he needed 109 pitches to get through 5 innings. So, like I mentioned, the kind of the full Edward Cabrera experience. On the season, he has 36 strikeouts and also 25 walks over 27 innings. Then, unfortunately, I mean, I was really high on Cabrera coming into the season. I rostered him on, I think I might have him in all of my leagues. I did go ahead and cut him in like a really shallow league already, but I'm holding so far and the others. I mean, unfortunately, like, it's going to be tough to spot. Like, I don't know that necessarily the opponent really matters with him a whole lot. Like, I feel like if he has it, he's going to be good. And if he doesn't, he doesn't. And that makes for a really difficult situation for fantasy managers. Like, he could have just a cake matchup, but if he doesn't have his control that day, then he's going to be bad. If he does, he's going to be awesome. Just a volatile arm. There's really no other way to put it. I mean, the upside, though, is just fantastic. I mean, the guy throws a 95 mile an hour changeup. Like, this stuff is just fantastic, and we saw both sides of it on Saturday. I'm holding for now. I'm really hoping he can reel off like just a long stretch of at least decent control. But I mean, like, he's gonna have to like limit the hits, like really limit the hits in order to not be just a complete drain on your whip, which he did kind of did last year. Like, he only gave up like 44 hits in 70-ish innings. So even though his walk rate was like above 4/9, he still had like a 107 whip. So, I mean, it's a high wire act with him, but I still like the upside enough to at least keep him on my bench.
Yeah. I think you mentioned Atlanta looks like that'll be his next start, and that's a tough lineup to navigate with his approach. But hey, like, would it shock you if he just reels off another double-digit strikeout game as well?
Right.
Hunter Green would be up for me. Another guy who's pretty volatile usually. Did not factor into the decision Saturday against the A's, but the Reds won their fourth straight game 3-2 with a two-run rally in the top of the ninth inning. For most of his outing, Green was excellent. Not necessarily surprising against that A's lineup. He did give up two runs in the bottom of the second on a Ramon Laureano double. Laureano's back from the IL, too. He got activated on Saturday, only spent 10 days on the IL. And then Green gave up a pair of singles in that inning, but those runs were both unearned because of there was an error mixed in. And then Green fully settled in from there, wound up with 10 strikeouts across his five innings of work, 24 whiffs on 55 swings. The pitch count ballooned early, which can be an issue for Green. But I think you got to dig the overall season stat line so far on a pitcher that many identified as a breakout candidate going into the spring. A 2.89 ERA, 40 strikeouts, 11 walks through 28 innings. Doesn't have a win yet. Those could be hard to come by on a not-so-great Reds team, despite the current winning streak. But the strikeouts should be there, and it's looking like there will be ERA value too with those dominant stretches that he can pull off mixed in with some periods where maybe the command gets away from him or pitches become a little bit hittable once, you know, it's like a third time through the lineup once you see 100 miles an hour. Major league hitters can usually catch up to it and make some contact. Gets the White Sox next, who are just down so bad right now. That'll be this coming Friday. I'd feel really good about, I mean, yeah, obviously you're starting Green every time he's listed as a probable pitcher. I like what we've seen so far from him. It's kind of predictable, but it's been on the good side of predictable.
Yeah, I mean, from a just like a strikeouts per inning perspective, like maybe Spencer Strider has a little more upside, but I think Green is like right in there in that conversation. And that's even with that's even with a fastball that, I mean, has been surprisingly hittable for as much velocity as he has. Like if he can ever figure out a great command with that heater and just kind of lean into a lot of sliders, which is just a disgusting pitch for him. I mean, the upside with him is obviously massive. Like you mentioned, though, on the Reds, the wins, I don't know how many he's going to be able to come up with there. Not a favorable home environment as far as a ballpark goes, but tremendous upside with Hunter Green. Another
Speaking
guy
of Strider, though, like he got delayed. So he was supposed to start on Saturday. That game got postponed. Supposed to start on Sunday. That game got postponed, both against the Mets, which also pushes back on the Mets side. It pushes back Scherzer because he was supposed to return from his 10-game sticky stuff suspension for Monday's series finale. This series between Atlanta and the Mets goes through Monday. So now he can't return until Wednesday, Scherzer. The reason he dropped his appeal, he said, is because he wanted to pitch in that series versus Atlanta. He does get the Tigers, though. So, you know, fantasy manager, I guess, will take it, even though they have to wait a few more days.
Yeah, anyway. Miss out on that two-start week, but that favorable matchup is nice. Grayson Rodriguez looked really good yesterday as well. First major league win over the aforementioned Tigers. 9 strikeouts over 5 shutout innings. Just 2 hits and 1 walk allowed over his last 2 starts. He's thrown 5 scoreless innings both times out. Also both times out, those outings were against the Tigers. So take it with a little bit of a grain of salt. Now over 24 and a third innings on the season, he's got a 34-11 strikeout to walk rate. Velocity was down a little bit in this last start. I feel like the stuff is just not quite been at the level we expected, but he's been, I mean, getting strikeouts.
Good. He's wild though.
Yeah.
He's wild.
Mm-hmm. But he's piling up strikeouts, coming off two good starts. I don't know what the workload's ultimately going to be for him. I mean, remember he missed like two thirds of the minor league season last year with that. I think he had like a lat tear.
Lat, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I don't know how he hasn't gone beyond five innings in any of his starts yet. Although his pitch count has been like, I think he's thrown 90 plus pitches in all but his major league debut. So at least from a pitch count perspective, they haven't been babying him too much. But yeah, Grayson Rodriguez, Orioles look like they're going to be pretty good. I think the backing should be there offensively, but wins could still be fairly hard to come by because he's just not going to pitch terribly deep into games.
Yeah. All right. Three down from Saturday. Caleb Killian, he got roughed up in his first major league outing of the year Saturday against the Marlins. Seven earned runs on 10 hits and two walks over just 3 1/3 innings. Not that he was like a recommended fantasy streamer at all going into that one. Pretty unappealing minor league numbers. I know it was inflated by one just really bad start and the others were okay. But fantasy managers like in deeper leagues might have seen that matchup at Miami and thrown like a desperation weekend dart at it. I know we all do that if we're playing in daily leagues sometimes, if it's a head-to-head type of thing. And it just certainly didn't work out if you did do that. Killian was occupying the rotation spot that with the Cubs that eventually will belong back to Jameson Taillon, who's making sort of slow but steady progress from his mild to moderate groin strain. Finally threw off a mound Saturday. Should be able to return around the middle of May. Killian did get sent back to AAA Iowa on Sunday morning, so it looks like the Cubs will go a different route the next time that turn comes up. No off days for the Cubs in the coming week or even over the next 10 days, so someone is going to have to fill that spot. Maybe they'll try a bullpen game. Maybe Killian gets another shot via some kind of injury. Either way, I think he remains a pretty unappealing fantasy option. We knew that going in, but in the short term and probably the long term, I don't really see him becoming an ace. Could be eventually be like a solid major league starter, but not a big time fantasy target in dynasty leagues and certainly not in redraft leagues.
Yeah, I remember when Killian came up last year, there was a little bit of buzz there, mm-hmm. and he showed some flashes, but yeah, he's certainly borderline at best in a redraft and more of a probably a back end starter type over the long haul.
Yeah.
Lance Lynn yesterday actually took a no-hitter into the seventh inning. And then wound up not getting a quality start. Wound up being charged with 4 runs over 6 1/3 innings. That the Rays actually scored 10 runs in that seventh inning. 4 of them charged to Lynn, like I mentioned. I mean, the White Sox, man, they're up against it. They're like, up against it right now. Pedro Grifol is getting kicked out of like 2 games in a row, I think. I mean, seems like he's starting to crack already. It's just a bad situation for the White Sox. But, I mean, on the positive side, I actually think, I mean, overall, it was a pretty encouraging outing for Lynn. He had 10 strikeouts, season high, 19 swinging strikes. The ERA in the season is over 7 for Lynn. I think he's a pretty decent buy low guy, though. The White Sox, I'm sure, can't possibly be this bad. And Lynn is getting his strikeouts. I think he could ultimately, if they don't turn it around, get traded. Maybe he's a former and future Cardinal, although the Cardinals might be sellers themselves the way it's looking.
I know.
Yeah, but yeah.
That was after, what was it? Steve Stone, one of the White Sox broadcasters was saying Lynn maybe needed to change up his diet or something.
Yeah.
He's gone through these periods of like
something.
Yeah, that's the comment.
Yeah.
He's going through these periods of like he'll lose weight and then he's not as effective. And so he puts it back on. He's just a big boy.
You know? Yeah. And they said it. And Lynn had a good quote after the game, too, kind of showing the overall frustration to the team. Some reporter asked him, like, you know, you had a no-hitter going into the seventh inning or et cetera. And Lynn's like, I did. I didn't even realize it. Oh, I mean, we lost the bleeping game, so it doesn't bleeping matter, or something like that. A classic classic Lance Lynn quote.
He's always a gem in those post-game press conferences.
Yeah.
They'll ask him, like, oh, you know, how did you attack the hitters today? He's like, just threw a lot of fastballs. That's what I do. All right, buddy. Reed Detmers, who had a lot of buzz as like a breakout candidate after he looked so great this spring with increase in velocity across his entire arsenal. The spin rates looked good, but he allowed 7 runs, 4 of them earned on 4 hits and 3 walks over 4 1/3 innings Saturday. And the Angels lost to the Brewers, which leaves Detmers at 0-2 on the season with a 4.85 ERA, 1.39 whip, 31-10 strikeout to walk through 26 innings, 5 starts. In that game Saturday against the Brewers, Detmers was actually awesome in the early going. 5 strikeouts through 2 perfect first innings. And the Brewers had been struggling against left-handed pitching in recent weeks, so it all like set up well for him to keep cruising. And then suddenly it didn't. I'm still optimistic about Detmers. I still see some reasons to believe with the velocity and the whiff rate. But you look at like his extension, fastball spin, breaking ball spin are all pretty underwhelming from what we thought we might get coming into the year. The data does not really like what he's doing. Gets the Rangers at Angel Stadium next. That'll be next weekend. Hopefully a positive building block in that one. He's looking, I don't know, looking like a, more of a streamer suddenly. But if you have him, I wouldn't drop him. We did have a question about from someone. Let me try to pull it up. Eric, Detmers or should I drop Detmers for Mitch Keller? What do you think about that comparison? I love what Keller's doing. And you don't want to overreact to like small sample size stuff in April, but the data backs up that Keller has like taken a huge step forward and the results have been there so far. What does he have, like 2 double-digit strikeout games already? Or he had one in his last turn against the Dodgers too.
Yeah. I mean, I'm super encouraged about what we've seen out of Keller too. I wouldn't drop Detmers for him. I mean, I would try to roster both if you can.
Yeah, right, yeah.
I don't know if there's another.
That's a pretty good squad, though. Verlander, Manoah, Rasmussen, Darvish, Kershaw, Dustin May, Pablo Lopez, Hunter Brown, Zach Eflin,
and Detmers. Yeah, I mean, I guess
your league.
Detmers is probably the low man on the totem pole out of that group, but I would not want to drop him. I'm still pretty bullish on Detmers over the long haul.
I wonder if you could drop a hitter and just go get Keller. I think they're both worth rostering. I guess it's probably a 10-team league just looking at that pitching staff. I would try to figure out a way to grab both, even though you might feel like you have too many pitchers. If you have to drop a position player from your bench in like a 10-team league, you don't necessarily need position players on your bench.
Yeah, that would be ideal to be able to go ahead and pick up Keller and hang on to Detmers and the rest of the guys in the pitching staff as well. You want to get into some Fab talk?
Let's do it.
I think Tanner Bibby is probably going to be everybody's going to be looking at, you know, TGFBI, all those leagues to see what people wound up spending on Bibby. He's going to be the big money item this week. Just looked fantastic in his major league debut at home against the Rockies. 8 strikeouts, no walks, 1 run over 5 2/3 innings pitched. Had 11 whiffs on 91 pitches. I don't think they officially confirmed when he's going to start next, but he's still around the team, and they said he's going to go on the road trip with them. Seems like he's lined up to pitch at Yankee Stadium against the Yankees next, which – I mean, seems kind of daunting on the surface, but the Yankees really aren't hitting very well right now.
And they might not have Aaron Judge. Yeah.
Might still be without Aaron Judge at that point. So, and if he does, I was just going to say, even if he does get that next start at Yankee Stadium, which I think would line up Wednesday, it looks like his next start after that would be against the Tigers. So, Tanner Bibby's a really interesting guy to target right now. I mean, 2.13 ERA, 186 to 35 strikeout to walk rate, over 148 innings in the minors last season. I mean, he's the Guardians are just one of those organizations that have earned the benefit of the doubt. Just what they do with their pitching staff at this point. You know, Bibby was kind of in the same vein as Shane Bieber in that he was like a college pitcher with great control and not standout stuff really. And they just figured out a way to bring those guys to the next level. And he's, you know, he threw 148 innings in the minors, as I mentioned. So I don't know that he's going to face much workload restriction. He's got a vast repertoire of pitches. I think he's certainly has it within the range of outcomes to be a mixed league standout rest of season. So I would be rushing to the waiver wire if he's somehow still available, and certainly going to be interesting to see those fab dollars spent. Another guy we already talked about a little bit earlier, Gavin Stone, just kind of reiterate some of the stuff we already brought up about him. Looks like he's going to be making his major league debut this week. Bit of a slow start this season, but you know, last two starts has looked really good. I'm curious to see what the Dodgers do with that rotation. As I mentioned before, Stone looks like the sixth starter right now, but Noah Syndergaard does not look good. Could conceivably be replaced if Stone looks good. So I'm not sure what the workload or long-term outlook is going to be for Stone, but the talent is certainly there. And he's, because of that uncertain role, I think he's not going to be the level of fab spending is not going to be what it is for Tanner Bibby, but the upside warrants a decent size investment anyway.
Yeah, speaking of the Guardians, I picked up Logan Allen for this start at Boston. I was pulling up the box score. He 4 innings, 4 scoreless innings, 6 strikeouts, 1 walk so far. Oh, wait. Nice. he just gave up 2 runs in the bottom of the 5th. But still a pretty good outing for him. Man, I totally jinxed that. but, yeah. I think he's a guy that's going to stick around for more starts too. And I like what he wasn't like very good in the minors last year, but he had an awesome debut. Was that against the Marlins earlier this month? Or I thought that was like last Sunday, I believe, 8 strikeouts over something like 5 innings of 1 run ball. Anyway, I like that. I liked him as a streaming option and possibly someone that's going to stick around on my roster. Gets the Twins next. You know, that could be an okay matchup. Randall Grichuk, Chris and I talked a bit about him on Saturday's show. He was so bad on his 8-game minor league rehab assignment that there wasn't much excitement when he finally made his Rockies debut Saturday against the Diamondbacks. But he went 2-for-4 with 2 singles, had a hard hit lineout, 1 strikeout. Positive signs that he's healthy and ready to be a contributor in that Rockies offense. We kind of know the player that Grichuk is at this point: raw power, poor plate approach, plays good defense, has a little bit of speed. But I think that's a good way to get some cheap Coors Field effect on your roster, and a player who could probably reach 20 plus homers with the way the ball's flying this year, even having missed the first 4 weeks of the regular season while recovering from offseason hernia surgery. I don't know. Like what I kind of like about him is that the rule changes and the way that the game is being played with a more aggressive pace, I think it kind of works for him. He's always kind of been an aggressive player, sometimes to a fault. Maybe he steals more bases. Maybe he attacks more pitches. I could see him being a pretty meaningful contributor in a number of different fantasy scoring categories as like a 4th or 5th outfielder in those type of deeper formats. I think Grichuk should be relatively attractive, especially when the Rockies are playing at home, and they are right now finishing up a series. And then I think they start next week with a series at home as well.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, he was, I would say, a little bit of a disappointment last year from a power perspective, but as you mentioned, the ball is playing definitely jumpier this year. So I could see Grichuk being mixed league viable rest of season. Ideally, those kind of guys, kind of borderline mixed league guys, you would be able to play him at Coors when he's got a bunch of home games coming up, and then bench him on the road.
He's almost like a streaming outfielder. Outfielder that you stream. Brian Baio did not have a great experience in his season debut back on Patriots Day against the Angels. That was a rainy morning in Boston, a lot of stops and starts in that one. I think it took about 5 hours to fully get it in. And he didn't last long. 5 earned runs on 8 hits and a walk, made it just 2 2/3 innings. But Baio was better next time out against the Brewers, and then returned to the Red Sox rotation against Saturday versus the Guardians, and took another step forward. 6 strikeouts over 5 innings of one-run ball in what was an 8-7 win for the Red Sox. He was dealing with a blister toward the end of that outing, which he said affected his slider. Got pulled at 84 pitches, maybe could have covered the 6th inning if the blister was not a factor. The Red Sox need some coverage from their starters. There wasn't much concern about the blister post-game. The read is that it's going to be something that's manageable. He does line up to face the Blue Jays next, which is obviously a dangerous offense. I think he's an appealing pickup, and then you'd kind of have to weigh whether you want to start him against Toronto. It is on Thursday, which is usually a lighter slate of games, and maybe he's, you know, the best option out there depending on the size of your league and the whatever else is on the board. So I think he could actually be the most, you know, appealing streaming option available if his turn does come on Thursday. And so, I don't know, you might as well pick him up right now with some of your a light allotment of fab dollars, or, you know, pluck him up off waivers. There's
There definitely is. Like, yeah, keep an eye on that finger issue to see if he does make that next start. But I mean, I generally like betting on guys that get strikeouts and a lot of ground balls. Like, that's just a great combination to have if you can pull it off. And Brian Baio falls into that bucket. So I think he's worth picking up. Another guy off to just a kind of unforeseen start, I would say, definitely, is Geraldo Perdomo from the Diamondbacks. I went 3-for-5 with a 3-run home run and an RBI single Saturday at Coors Field. Sitting on a 1090 OPS on the season, taking over the starting shortstop job against right-handed pitching. Nick Ahmed, I think, has only made one start against righties so far this year, so it's been a pretty strict platoon in that regard. Perdomo is, I mean, he's kind of a guy who's been liked by scouts. I mean, I think there's some tools there, but the numbers really haven't been great. I mean, he's put up some decent stolen base totals in the minors, but just from a power perspective and the hitting tool perspective, and the overall is just not, it's kind of a bit underwhelmed from that regard, but obviously off to a great start. But worth pointing out, sitting on a 390 average, his expected batting average via Statcast is 236. So the quality of contact just hasn't been great. He does draw some walks, has a little speed, as I mentioned. Although I think his sprint speed is not rated that well. But, I mean, maybe he can get some stolen bases. The Diamondbacks in general are a pretty aggressive running team. He's getting the playing time. I think he batted second maybe yesterday. So, you know, there's a little bit of appeal there. I don't know that he certainly is not going to continue at this pace, but a little bit of power, a little bit of speed. I think he's worth, he should have a little bit of positional versatility as well. I think he's worth a smaller fab bid if he's still out there in your waiver wire.
All right, that'll do it for us on this Sunday show. Thanks for tuning into the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast, brought to you again by Rival Fantasy, rivalfantasy.com, or download the app today. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Drew Silve. Ryan is at Ryan P. Boyer. Stay tuned for more episodes every day of the week.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.